that we look at them one game at a time. We look at these guys for who they are. They're a very good team. They're on a roll. We're not worried about ramifications. We're not worried about all of the buildup and things of that nature. We're worried about how we play, and that's what our goal is, to get focused in on our preparation. They're all big. Every single one of them is a factor in the grand scheme of things. They're all big. And the most important one is the next one. And that's how we look at it. My experience has been it can work against you more than it works for you when you start looking at the grand scheme of things and acting as if one game is going to make a complete difference in the entire season, because you don't know what's going to happen the rest of the season. You have no idea. None of you know. You think you know. You think we might know how to play, how it plays out, but I don't think anybody in here is omnipotent. At least I haven't run into the omnipotent one yet.
Honestly, just trying to kind of feel the wind, and it was gusting pretty good, and then, you know, I think right around the time we snapped it, it quieted down a little bit, but man, it was still blowing. So that's a hell of a kick. I got a lot of confidence in that guy. He, you know, obviously we want to start the game with a bunch of points and a bunch of stops on defense, and sometimes it doesn't happen that way, but we're a resilient group. Second half struggle, man. That's a good defense we're facing. It's a good football team. I got a lot of talent, a lot of young talent. You know, we'll have a bunch of stuff to clean up, short week to do it, but it's nice to go on the road in the division and get a win.
Trying to do whatever I can to string together some games, continue to prove my development to my teammates, to continue to earn the respect of them. I think this is the first game that, you know, come off the field feeling as if I didn't prove that I, you know, developed in at least one area. Well, it's a bad feeling knowing that it's a question. But yeah, I think that knowing that where you're at going into next week, it at least allows you to have some sort of peace of mind going into the following week.
I had some chances, couldn't get it done. They made some plays at the end, and I gave them a chance to win the game.
I love our focus. I love the fact the way we're practicing, and the word focus is intent. Focus is the mantra right now, and I like where we're at.
A lot of credit goes to its senior day. It's a lot of activity going on with what's coming up next, what's down the road, etc. But our players were laser-like focused. That's 2 weeks in a row, and now it's time to turn the rivalry week.
However, we did celebrate it for a quick minute, and then that's over. Now it's time to put our laser lights on our rival.
They were able to crack a few runs in the running game. Taylor got out. We weren't able to get any big chunks in the running game, and they made more plays. We had some opportunities. I couldn't get it done today. Well, I really thought it was a touchdown from the reviews that were on the scoreboard, what the guys said in the press box. Looked like the left foot got down first. As far as the fumble, that was a mistake. Shouldn't be reaching the ball for the end zone or the pylon unless it's fourth down.
Yeah, but I am a Heisman voter, and I'm conflicted by it, and I don't want to be the get-off-my-lawn guy. I'm as troubled by the reaction to this as I am by what he did. I mean, let's remember, this is someone who got arrested and apologized, who planted the flag and apologized, and he did this, and I get it. It was disgraceful what Kansas did, but who cares about Kansas? I mean, you have to be above this. Still going to vote for him for the Heisman Trophy, but I'm losing faith in this guy. He has a few more weeks, and if he does something like this again, I'm done with him.
I thought what Kansas did initiated his reaction, and he'd be the first one to tell you he's got to be bigger than that. You're talking about probably the Heisman Trophy winner, and when you're chasing a Heisman Trophy, it's not just about being the best player, it's about carrying yourself with integrity and with class. And we all get that competitive spirit, that chip on his shoulder that makes him who he is, but he's got to be able to internalize and be able to have some perspective of where to draw the line. And he let that competitive spirit once again get the best of him, and I think it was probably embarrassing when he went back and looked at the tape.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza. Thanks again for joining us as we get you started on this Monday afternoon at 12 minutes after 3. And my goodness, what a Monday afternoon quarterback show we have got lined up for you today. Lots of football to respond to, a lot of stuff to analyze, a lot of things that happen kind of, well, you know, we oftentimes differentiate between things that happen on the field and off the field. What if it's on the field but not on the field of play? What if it's on the sideline? That's the last thing you heard in the montage there. Paul Feinbaum and Kirk Herbstreit all talking about the probable Heisman Trophy winner, and very well deserving, by the way, the most consistently great player all season long for one of the top two or three or four teams in the country, Baker Mayfield and the Oklahoma Sooners. He has earned, no question about it, the status right now as the Heisman favorite. He has also earned a little bit of enmity from some who say his antics, oftentimes in reaction to trolling from other teams and other players, are unacceptable and perhaps unworthy of somebody who is going to be given college football's highest honor. So we're going to talk a lot about that as we get going today. So the college game, the Buckeyes took care of their business. The Wolverines, well, they got taken care of by a team looking to handle their business, and that is win a Big Ten championship and a spot in the college football playoff Final Four. The Wisconsin Badgers did a tremendous job. They knocked starting quarterback Brandon Peters from the game, forced Michigan to try to rely on the run. They could not run the ball. Wisconsin, an easy win over the Wolverines. And that's the setup for the game. The big game in Ann Arbor this year. It's coming up on Saturday. Ohio State rolling in with a lot of momentum after two straight wins following the Iowa debacle. Going up against Jim Harbaugh, whose Wolverines are now a robust fourth in the Big Ten East. Congratulations to the Wolverines for securing the fourth spot in the Big Ten East. Begging this question from Michigan fans. Is Harbaugh ball working? Is this satisfactory in year three for Harbaugh ball? And we're just calling it that for the simple, you know, the simplicity of calling it that. This is Jim Harbaugh's team. It's his style. It's his persona. It's, you know, at least one and a half of his draft classes. So essentially, this is Jim Harbaugh's team year three. Is this Harbaugh ball working the way you believe it should? Because right now, they are not a national title contender. They're clearly not a Big Ten title contender. As I said, they're fourth in the Big Ten East. And now they have to face the angry Buckeyes, who are going to be trying to make a statement on their way into their half of the Big Ten championship game against those very same Wisconsin Badgers. And the Buckeyes clicking on all cylinders in a very wet, rainy, downpour type of atmosphere on Saturday against Illinois. But another blowout win against an overmatched opponent. They're very good at doing that. And they go into the Michigan game with a lot of confidence and a lot of momentum, obviously knowing they have another week to play after that, at least before the playoffs or the bowl games are decided. So we've got all of that going on. And then, of course, in the National Football League yesterday, the Lions did what had to be done. It was must win. They won. Did they win pretty? No, they did not. Did they win easy? No, they did not. Should the Chicago Bears have been a little bit easier to take down than they were? Yes, they should have been. Does any of that matter in the least when you consider the standings? No, it does not. They got the win. They finished this three-game cupcake portion of their schedule with the Packers minus Rodgers. We call them a cupcake because of the absence of Aaron Rodgers. But they finished this three-game schedule, or a part of the schedule, Packers, Browns, and Bears, 3-0, which is what they had to be after going 0-3 in the previous three against Carolina, New Orleans, and Pittsburgh, three very good teams. So what does that tell you about your Detroit Lions coming into Thanksgiving Day play against the Minnesota Vikings with, well, you can't say first place on the line, but with any chance of winning in the NFC North, it's a must win. If you ever hope to achieve first place in the NFC North this season, you have to beat the Vikings, who are rolling. And we'll talk about what they did to the Rams coming up in just a bit on the program. But the Lions got a W. They needed to do it. Begs this question. Who are they? Are they just a very, very average team that can beat crap teams but get beat up on by good teams? Because in their last six, the answer to that question is yes. They played in a row. Carolina, Pittsburgh, or New Orleans, and Pittsburgh. Three teams that are rolling. Three teams that are clearly looking like playoff teams. They lost all three of them. Then they played three cupcakes in a row, Green Bay, Cleveland, and Chicago, and they won all three. So is this a team that can beat up on the also-rans and the would-bes, could-bes, and never-will-bes, but is just not ready for prime time against the tough teams? Is that accurate, or is that a little bit unfair? Is it a little bit unfair considering the fact that prior to that three-game losing streak that I mentioned, they beat the Vikings, one of the only two losses the Vikings have suffered this year? So they'll find out, or we'll find out, coming up on Thanksgiving Day this Thursday as the Lions host, traditionally, of course, Thanksgiving Day football against the Vikings. And they're two games back, Jim Cushlin,
yes,
in the NFC North. Everything held serve. The Vikings have to be feeling extraordinarily confident, given the fact that they went into this NFC North showdown for first place kind of thing, if you want to call it that, just simply because the Lions are sitting in second.
Mm-hmm.
They come into this having taken down one of the hottest teams in the NFL. They shut down Jared Goff and the Los Angeles Rams, who were the highest scoring team in the NFL in terms of total points coming into this week. They held them to 7 points. They shut down the Rams' running game. They could not get moving at all with Todd Gurley. Jared Goff couldn't get anything done. The Vikings' defense looked tremendous. And that's what Matthew Stafford is going to be staring, Jim Bob Cooter, they're going to be staring in the face for this this Thursday.
Yeah, absolutely. And good thing that you mentioned that. Yeah, it is. It's not a showdown technically for first place anymore on Thursday, which, by the way, 10:30 the coverage time Thursday morning on Thanksgiving morning right here on the Ticket. As soon as that coverage is done, we'll have the other two NFL games, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One. So a little programming update for your holiday if you're traveling or to grandma's or whatever. We got some games for you, but yeah, it's still a 2-game separation. So I agree with the one thing you definitely said there, which is, any chance to win the division? We've been kind of alluding to this for a little bit now, but any chance to overtake the Vikings for this division, have to get a win, close it to a game, and then secure the possible tiebreaker should it come to that.
I think we can almost really call it a battle for first place simply because if you don't win it, you're not going to reach first place.
True,
because
it'll be 3 games.
I mean, with 6 games to play.
Point, yep.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. With 6 games to play, you're not going to be there. So it doesn't mean if you win this game, you're in first place, but at least you're alive still.
Right.
And if the Vikings take another tumble someplace and you continue to win, well, again, we've talked about this. If they ended up within an identical record, the Lions would hold the head-to-head tiebreak. So it is a battle for first place in that if you don't win it, you cannot be in first place in all likelihood, because I do not see the Vikings losing 3 or 4 of their last, 5 or 6 games. I don't see that happening.
No, yeah, I don't either. And, yeah, it'll be a very big mountain to climb if you lose this one. And as you point out, yeah, you're 3 games out with 6 to go or whatever. Yeah, that's going to make it very, very tricky. And plus, you don't want to be amongst the giant crowded field that we've also been talking about about 2 weeks now in the NFC. Nothing really feels like it got cleared up at all yesterday.
No, I mean, other than, these teams are proving their dominance. The NFC is a very, very, very good conference. And it's a very, very difficult thing to try to do to try to make one of the wild cards, in this conference. You have to win a division because the competition for the wild cards is just too stiff. Now, the plus side, some things that did get sorted out. For example, the Eagles tore the Dallas Cowboys apart, dropping the Cowboys down to 5-5.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, they're in danger of slipping outside of the, realm of the favorites, if you will.
Yes.
If you could use that term, to win a wild card spot, because they're at 500. The Lions are a game better at 6-4. The Packers lost very badly. Same thing. So they dropped down to 5-5. Lions sitting at 6-4. So, you say nothing was worked out.
And there's, by the way, before you
get to... It has been in some ways, some teams that were competitors, for the wild card spot or may still be, but some of them did lose yesterday, mm-hmm. and that helps the Lions' status. What was that you were going to say?
And what I was going to say is there'll be a little bit more clarity also with the Monday night game, Atlanta-Seattle. You got Seattle right now holding that last spot at 6-3. Falcons right behind the Lions at 5-4, so that's going to change what you're looking at right now just based on we still got a Monday night game to go that is right smack in the middle of this wild card race.
Yeah, no question about it. And then, as I mentioned, the Rams, they lose a game to the Seahawks. I mean, they lose a game in the standings to the Seahawks. Seattle at 6-3, the Rams now at 7-3. So that's where we are. And then, as you say, we got Monday Night Football coming up with Seattle and Atlanta tonight. So it's still going to be very, very tough for the Lions. But if they have their druthers at all, you don't want to worry about what anybody else is doing. Just beat Minnesota, cut it to a game. Hope that your late schedule is softer than theirs. And it is. It is. And hope they trip again and you tie for the division and then perhaps win the division outright. You don't want to mess around with some of these wild card teams. There are some of these wild card teams or potential second place teams that I wouldn't want anything to do with right now, to be honest with you, if I'm the Lions. So the Vikings is tracking on the Vikings is the best way to go. Vikings, by the way, have won 6 straight now. And they continue to play outstanding football under the leadership of Case Keenum. In a quarterback's league, everybody's talking about, well, when are they going to give the ball back to Teddy Bridgewater? We talked about that a little bit last week. Case Keenum, 27-38 against the first-place Rams, 280 yards and a touchdown. He has done nothing. No reason he did not turn the ball over. He had a quarterback rating of 100.8 yesterday, a QBR of 76.5, which was second highest in the league. He has done nothing. to suggest that maybe it's time to give the ball back to the former starter before he blew out his knee in a non-contact injury, Teddy Bridgewater. Any suggestion that Minnesota should play around and get Case Keenum out of there, to me, is just foolhardy. And I forgot who our guest was last week who said that's what he thinks they would do pretty quickly. All Keenum would have to do, even in a win, is say throw two touchdowns and two interceptions, and that would be enough of an excuse to go back to Bridgewater.
Yeah,
I could not disagree more wholeheartedly.
Yeah, FYI, that might have been Adam Stites. We had him on Friday for NFL Talk. So, but I'm kind of with you on that type of front. I really am.
Okay, so I'm sorry. I thought you were going to talk longer, so I took a drink. Okay, so to the other conference, and I just have to get this off of my chest, Jim, to the 0-10 Cleveland Browns. I rant about this seemingly every week with some vigor and some anger because it's just so reprehensible what that franchise has become. I have no idea how anybody who has been a fan of that team is still a fan of that team. You shouldn't be. It is simply inexcusable for you to give them a pass on all of this. Inexcusable. So I want to do this as they fell to 0-10. And by the way, it's official now, Jim. I don't know if you realize this. The Browns are now literally, officially, the worst football team in the history of the National Football League.
I did come across this at one point.
This is the stat that was broken yesterday. A new NFL record for futility. The Browns are now 4-43 over their last 47 games. They have won 4 times and lost 43 times in 47 chances. Starting with a loss to the Buffalo Bills, November 30th of 2014. They had been tied with the 07 to 2010 Detroit Lions. Shockingly, here in Toledo, we get all of the futility of the world to our north and to our east, right? The Lions, at that point in time, were 4-42. With yesterday's loss, the Browns have now gone 4-43 over 47 games. It is the worst 47-game stretch that any team has ever had in the history of the National Football League. Now let that sink in for a moment. They have lost 35 of their last 37. They have lost 43 of their last 47. That's impossible to do in a league in which the worst team gets rewarded with the highest draft picks, free of any lottery systems, free of any shenanigans or chicanery. It's just a matter of you guys suck. You suck so bad. Here, take the top pick in every round. 7 rounds, 7 picks, you got them. My goodness, get some players to make yourself competitive. This is embarrassing for you. It's painful for your fans. Here, we want you to be better. And the Browns don't get better. Ever. Ever. They waste draft picks. They skip good players. They assemble more draft picks and draft mediocre players. Guys who end up out of the league. They are just simply, they're an abomination. But Kush, this is what I want to say about the Browns particularly, specifically, as it pertains to this particular season in which they are 0-10. The New England Patriots are clearly one of the best passing teams in the National Football League. That's not a secret, right? Kush, you okay with that?
Right, yeah.
Pretty fair thing to say.
Yeah, it would be fair.
Tom Brady is leading the National Football League in passing yards, by the way, at age 40, with 3,146 yards. He is a good 400 yards clear of the second-place guy, Kirk Cousins. In terms of passing offense, the New England Patriots lead the league in total passing yards per game at 305 yards per game. The second place team is the New Orleans Saints with Drew Brees, 272. They're 33 yards behind. That's because New England has what? Why do they pass the ball so much? Why do they throw the ball as often as they do? Let's look at the number of attempts. The highest number of attempts in passing this season belongs to the Arizona Cardinals at 392. San Francisco has thrown it, 391. Then the Patriots with 383. And there's a reason I'm going to all of this. Patriots have the highest yardage passing as a team this season in yards per game by a large margin, as I said, over number two, and they have the third most number of attempts. When you have Tom Brady, arguably the greatest quarterback in the history of the game, playing at the level he is, you can understand why they would air it out so much, right?
Right, yeah.
The Cleveland Browns have only thrown the ball four fewer times than Tom Brady's New England Patriots. They are the fourth highest team in passing attempts this season. They've thrown it 379 times. 379 to New England's 383. Four fewer attempts. One team has Tom Brady. One team has a second-round draft pick rookie quarterback by the name of DeShone Kizer. And in case you're wondering about how those things are working out, remember I told you New England has 305-yard passing yards game?
Right.
The Browns are 28th in the league with 200 yards. They've only thrown it four fewer times, but they're averaging 105 fewer passing yards per game. One has a Hall of Famer. The other one has a second-round draft pick out of Notre Dame by way of Toledo's Central Catholic High School. Someone explain to me how Hugh Jackson can continue to be a coach in this league. Somebody explain to me how that guy continue to be calling plays in this league when he is making DeShone Kizer, a young, up-and-coming, talented guy, but a guy who is nowhere near ready for this with the weapons that he has, and by weapons I mean lack of weapons around him, throw the ball as much as Tom Brady is throwing it for New England. You talk about destroying a quarterback. You talk about killing a guy's confidence. You talk about ending a guy's career before it has a chance to take off. How is Hugh Jackson able to justify throwing the ball fourth most in the National Football League, just four attempts behind Tom Brady in New England? You can see why Tom Brady throws a lot. He's Tom freaking Brady. Oh, and by the way, they're 8-2. Why is DeShone Kizer throwing the ball the same number of times as Tom Brady? Someone's going to have to explain that to me. Someone's going to have to explain to me how Hugh Jackson can get away with that dereliction of duty, that absolute indefensible offensive game planning for a young second-round guy who needs to be brought along slowly. DeShone Kizer can play. He can play. But he'll never, ever be able to get the trauma experienced of playing this season under Hugh Jackson out of his head. I guarantee he needs PTSD counseling by the time February rolls around. I swear to God. And you know what? He has been psychologically traumatized and damaged, and this is inexcusable. How are you throwing the ball as much as the New England freaking Patriots? Kush, that in and of itself should be the wild stat. That really should be our Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. I know we have another one, so I'll go ahead and play the music and do it, but that stat is probably wilder than anything you're going to give me right now. Let's go.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
All right, Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day for today is, where is it, Kush? You want to read it? Because I suddenly seem to have lost it. I guarantee it's not any more wild than the one that I just
No,
gave.
No, you are correct. Yeah, full disclosure, that stat is a little more wild, but I got
one
because...
Oh, here it is. I got it.
Okay,
got
go
it.
Ahead.
It has to do with Matthew Stafford.
I wanted a wild stat that will make people feel good.
Yeah, right. Matthew Stafford threw two more TD passes yesterday in the win over the Bears. His total now is 206 in his career. That means it was accomplished a couple of games ago. That means it was accomplished a couple of games ago. Stafford is just the fourth QB in history to have 200 passing touchdowns before the age of 30. The other three, Dan Marino, Peyton Manning, and Brett Favre. Okay, there you go. So congratulations to Matthew Stafford for that nice club to be in. I still say the wild stat I just gave you is far more wild.
Oh, no question. What I just wanted to do something to make people feel good.
What else is wild? Baker Mayfield's behavior and his response to a slight from the pregame Kansas Jayhawks in their game on Saturday. Baker Mayfield made the Jayhawks pay, and then he told them how he felt about it with a gesture that can just be described as a little bit obscene. Should he be suspended? That's what some are saying in the national media. We're going to find out what Bill Connolly of SB Nation College Football has to say coming up next.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And we all get that competitive spirit, that chip on his shoulder that makes him who he is. But he's got to be able to internalize and be able to have some perspective of where to draw the line. And he let that competitive spirit once again get the best of him. And I think it was probably embarrassing when he went back and looked at the tape.
All right, 3:41, we roll on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. That was Kirk Herbstreit talking about Baker Mayfield, the very likely and very deserving Heisman Trophy winner. Now, of course, that's not finalized, but I think most people would agree he's in the driver's seat. And that this little disciplinary snafu, if you will, this little scrape with the rules or with just positive decorum is probably not going to hurt him in terms of the Heisman Trophy. However, it did hurt him in the eyes of his coach enough that they are giving him a modest punishment. He is not going to be a captain, and he's not going to start in the game against West Virginia. This is Lincoln Riley speaking of Baker Mayfield. I almost called Baker Mayfield the head coach. Maybe in his head he is.
Come to the decision after thinking about it here over the last few days. A couple things are going to happen. Baker won't be a captain for this game, which is a big deal to him, I know, especially and for our team, because of the kind of leader he is, and this is the last time that he gets to do it on Owen Field. He also will not start this game, but he will play. And then we're going to continue to provide some opportunities, chances for him to continue to get around youth and have opportunities off the field to continue to have the impact that he wants. And I think he referenced that very well in his statement after the game. I know he's disappointed in himself and his actions, but I think the thing that probably disappoints him the most is probably twofold. One, that the incident took away some of the attention from, you know, his teammates and the great job that his teammates are doing. And the other, I know he really prides himself on setting a great example for young kids.
Well, we heard you already. He did not set a very good example on Saturday, so maybe in some of those personal interaction with kids he can change that. But what does it mean, big picture, about Baker Mayfield and his Oklahoma team, and what does it mean about his future in the NFL? Joining us now, Bill Connolly, college football commissioner extraordinaire from SB Nation. He writes about college football, joining us once again here on The Ticket. Hey, Bill, thanks for coming back with us, man. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, listen, I got to tell you, there are a lot of people coming down on Baker Mayfield really, really heavy today and yesterday after his, and we should put a little context on what he did with his crotch grab and his barking at the Kansas players. He went out there as a captain pregame, a coin toss, and offered his hand in a gesture of, you know, familiar respect and good luck, and they refused to shake his hand, wouldn't even look at him. Clearly, he took that little piece of trolling personally, and after he hung 41 on them, said, yeah, how do you like me now? As part of that, of course, it came that obscene gesture. A lot of people coming down on him. I feel like while his action, Bill, was inappropriate, I think some of the responses are even more inappropriate because I think they're going way over the top. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much guaranteed to be the case anytime you get this. When we start talking about decorum and conduct and all that, it always goes in this direction. I thought the most interesting thing about this whole thing is that the punishment was pretty much perfect. It is, you know, of all you can say about what he did, it wasn't very captain worthy. So don't let him be a captain. Don't let him start on senior day. And then we all move on with our lives and he wins the Heisman in a couple of weeks because he's been by far the best player in the country, at least at a position that wins the Heisman. And then we all move on with our lives from there.
Some are saying that his apologies are starting to get a little old because he's had to apologize a couple of different times. Heck, and I don't know why. But he even had to apologize after planting the flag in the middle of the field in the second game of the year when he came to the horseshoe and beat the Buckeyes and really handed it to him. And his emotion, he planted, and people said, what a terrible sign of disrespect. And to me, that's just college football, man. I don't have a problem with that. But some are saying every time he has to say something after the game, like, I'm sorry for what I did, each time he has to do it means he's not really any sorrier because he's not learning his lesson.
Well, there are two things going on. First of all, there's a reason why coach speak exists, because every time, you know, we complain about coach speak when coaches just say, then you're talking, don't actually say anything. But the bottom line is when they say something, they're asked about it for the next week. They have to talk about it. They have to go back to it. And they hate doing that. And it's the same way with players in that regard. But the other thing is that Just generally speaking, one of my biggest beliefs is that the things that create your best traits are the things that create your worst traits. And with Mayfield, all those things that we say we love about Mayfield, the competitiveness, the drive, the relentlessness, well, that doesn't stop the moment the play stops. Like, Kansas doing what they did before the game had absolutely and totally the effect they wanted it to have because he was still thinking about it at the end of the game. Now, he had also he took a couple cheap shots in that game too.
Yes, he did.
That were nice reminders of what they were going for there. And then when they kicked Kansas' butt anyway, he rubbed it in a little bit. He, you know, the crotch grab was taking it too far, and that's not ever something you want your captain and your the face of your program to do. Although I will say that ESPN blurring it out on the highlights made it worse. But it wasn't. Kansas got in his head, and he let it get into his head, and that was bad. But again, we move on because this just, you know, this is a story, I think, in part because this it happened the weekend it did when there wasn't just a whole heck of a lot else going on.
Let me ask you this about the Kansas actions here. How come they didn't have to speak to this? Because it wasn't classy. It was Bush League. It was crap. You know, they did what they wanted to do by getting in his head. They also breached what has just forever been, a very traditional, respectful, let's shake hands and wish each other good luck before the game. It's, you know, the referees even, they tell you to. After the coin toss, they say shake hands and go back to your sidelines. And do they have anything to apologize here for that kind of Bush League move? Because I didn't hear anything from Dave Beatty about it.
I mean, if Mayfield apologized, then technically, yeah, you could try to do the same. Like, I would prefer nobody apologize because it what happened.
Okay.
But just generally speaking, yeah, they were trying to send their own message. Now, granted, nobody on the Kansas team grabbed their crotch, but right. Long term, I would say the cheap shots probably had the most dangerous impact of anything that were going on. There was a couple, at least a couple, maybe there were only a couple, but I remember at least a couple late hits on him. That really could have, you know, done damage to Oklahoma's national title hopes. That was the biggest thing to me in all of this. So yeah, I mean, we want to send somebody to Lawrence and get David Beatty to try to apologize for it. I would not complain at all because that was dangerous.
Yeah, it really was. And I'll tell you what, not just could have done damage to Oklahoma's national championship hopes, but this guy's career. I mean, because those cheap shots, yeah. I mean, you don't know which one is going to be the worst one. And for this guy to be upset at A, the handshake, and B, the fact that he's taken these shots in the game, knows, I mean, his anger level is going to rise. And I can't blame him for that. I really can't. And yeah, the crotch grab is something you hope a camera doesn't see, but the yelling yep. FU, which also is caught on camera as he did it, that goes on in every game, at every level. Yep. That's not new. He's not the first player to yell FU to somebody that just tried to hurt him with an illegal cheap hit. I just don't see the outrage, the punishment in terms of the national reaction to this fitting the crime, because I don't think the crime was that egregious given all of the circumstances.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as of Friday morning when the game started again, we're done talking about it. I do think this is something that everything happens in a vacuum here, and the vacuum is what it is. We're still talking about last week. Here in a few days, we forget it existed at all. But at least I hope, because the fact that we had to talk about it at all was a little bit of a shame in and of itself, but it is a story, and I think it will remain a story for a couple of days. And then, or maybe when Mayfield comes into the game.
That's what I was going to say. It's going to stay that way until he comes off of the bench in a reserve role.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he throws two touchdown passes, and everybody forgets everything, and we all move on with our lives. But there's no, I think the bottom line here is that Kansas got exactly what they wanted out of the situation. They got in its head. It's just they still stink as a football team, and OU's still really good, so it didn't make nearly the difference they hoped it would.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. So let's talk about this, the reputation of Baker Mayfield, because you know this is coming, and it has in the national talk shows today. This is a Texas kid. He's from Texas, even though he plays for Oklahoma. This is a Texas kid, a little bit undersized, got a wild streak to him, puts up great numbers in a defenseless league. Sure looks like Johnny Manziel too to me. If I was a pro coach, I don't know if I'd want to draft this guy because it's going to turn out to be an undisciplined head case the way Johnny Manziel was. Is that fair criticism of him, or is that just completely below the belt? Pardon the pun, below the bell. That's a, but you see what I'm saying? They're saying he's young and immature, undersized, and there's too much to compare to Manziel.
Yeah, I mean, there are veins of similarity, just in terms of the fact that they improvise a lot, that they scramble out of the pocket, and that they kind of, you know, they will play by their own rules in that sense. Like within the, you know, just the scope of the play, they're going to improvise and they're going to do a lot of interesting stuff, for sure. And you know, the fact that Mayfield got himself arrested for being drunk in public in Arkansas back in February or March or whatever, you know, if you really want to make that comparison, then go for it. But that, the volume, we'll say that's a good word for it. We'll say the volume of activity off the field seemed like it was way different. The entitlement and whatnot that we always heard about and the father situation and all that doesn't completely seem to apply here. I think Johnny Manziel wishes he could throw a football like Baker Mayfield does. That's going to matter too. So if you want to hesitate on him, if you think the combination of his size and his improvising skills on the field and maybe off the field issues, if you want to talk yourself out of drafting him, that's fine. Chances are somebody else will draft him and they'll get a pretty good quarterback. And the lower he goes, the better it is for him, because that chip on his shoulders is just going to get that much bigger, or stay there, however you want to put it. But no, I mean, I hate comparing anybody to anybody. Everybody's different, but yeah. There are at least enough similarities here that you know somebody's going to make they already have, and you know they'll continue to make those comparisons.
Yeah, I just think it's unfair, because the one thing I don't think anybody has ever accused Baker Mayfield of being is unprepared. That he, you know, because that was Johnny Manziel's thing. He doesn't like the film room. He didn't like to study, and he figured he'd go out there and improvise his way through it. Baker Mayfield has not been accused of any of those things. Overly emotional,
sometimes
a little bit too much, okay, but. Last thing on him, and then a couple of other subjects. Is he the Heisman winner? Can you make a case for anybody else?
Well, there's this quarterback in Louisville who's having a really good year. I can't remember his name, but his stats are as good or better than they were last year. And I think it's kind of a
but his team is an out. The achievement level is lower than last year.
His defense stinks basically, and we know that matters. We know it's silly, and we know that matters. Now Mayfield's been. Even I wrote a piece about Lamar Jackson last week and basically saying, hey, why have we stopped talking about this guy? He's just as good and just as fun. But the bottom line is he also hasn't been as good a quarterback as Baker Mayfield has been this year. Mayfield has been on a different level. And I don't remember who said this. I saw it on Twitter earlier today. The best way I can put it with Mayfield is that if this was a close race, if it was him versus somebody else and it was a dead heat, maybe this pushes the other guy over the top. It's a blowout right now. I mean, if he loses ground, he only wins by, you know, 600 points instead of 700 or something. And that's good, because it would be silly not to vote for the guy because of this. But even if you don't, you're still voting for him, because he's still by far the favorite, I think.
No, I don't think there's any question about it. And just for those who are wondering exactly how good he's been, 3,800-plus passing yards, 71% of his passes completed, 34 touchdowns and just 5 picks. And has really been at his best in his biggest games. Against TCU, one of the best defenses in the country, just destroyed them. Against Ohio State at the Horseshoe, just destroyed them. And, of course, in the Bedlam game, two yards shy of 600 against Oklahoma State. That was at Stillwater, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it was. And, I mean, he made two bad passes in that game and threw two picks. And you know, they were pretty bad mistakes. And then he erased them by making about 38 other perfect plays throughout the game.
Yeah, and that really tells you all you need to know about him. So I completely agree. So just briefly, I want to ask a couple of quick things about the Big Ten. You know, we're all talking about whether or not they're going to have a representative in the Final Four. Wisconsin did what it had to do to keep its undefeated streak alive. They beat Michigan, did so relatively easily, 24-10, and now it's official. They will play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. If Wisconsin wins, right now they're on the outside. They're fifth going into tomorrow night's new ranking from the committee. But if they do indeed win out and beat the Buckeyes, they're automatically in, yes?
Yeah. I mean, I would, even if it weren't the case where Clemson and Miami, two of the teams above them, were playing each other, I mean, that pretty much clinches it right there. It would be a shock, and I would be absolutely appalled if the loser of Clemson-Miami somehow didn't fall below Wisconsin. So, yeah, I mean, just the existence of that game alone suggests they're in. But just, I think we've got still a couple more losses to go here anyway, so I would figure they'd be pretty safe regardless. But, yeah, no, with that quote-unquote elimination game right there, they're good.
How do things play out, do you think, with the Iron Bowl coming up with Alabama and Auburn, and then, of course, the winner playing Georgia in the SEC championship game? Is there a chance that there are going to be two SEC teams in, Bill?
At this point, I would be surprised if it played out that way. It is, I think, if you know, you do have a situation where Alabama beats Auburn and loses by, you know, 1 point, maybe via something fluky even in the SEC title game, depending on what happened with Wisconsin and OUTCU and these other things, then, yeah, I mean, maybe. But I don't think the odds are very good at all at this point. I figure the winner of Auburn-Alabama beats Georgia, which might be an overreaction to the Auburn-Georgia game from 2 weeks ago. Maybe if Georgia plays a lot, they can play a lot better than they did in that game, so maybe they turn it around regardless. But I kind of feel like the winner of the Iron Bowl is going to end up in the playoffs, along with, you know, probably at this point, you can make a very good case that the winner of the Wisconsin-Ohio State game ends up there as well. Maybe they need OU to lose to TCU in that scenario, but we'll see.
So you got Bama, and that'll be very interesting to see. As you pointed out, Clemson and Miami, the loser is going to drop out of the top four. Oklahoma, all of now they're going to play TCU again, are they not?
Most likely, I think there's a scenario
Oklahoma State
where
was
Iowa
upset.
State. Yeah, I think there. I can't remember. I thought there was a scenario where Iowa State still could, or something like that, but maybe not. Maybe I read that wrong. Regardless, I mean, TCU. It's almost definitely going to be TCU if it's not 100%, and. It's funny, I've gotten to the point with OU that I almost trust it. Like, I've been saying all year the Big 12 title game is ridiculous. It's absolutely the dumbest thing they could possibly do to have that, thinking that will help their playoff odds, where in this case, if OU loses to TCU, they lose their playoff bid.
That's it. That's exactly right.
You know, I mean, the Big 12 should know that as well as anybody, considering how many times they lost a title game, a BCS contender the first time they had a title game, all those different years that happened. But regardless, I almost trust OU at this point to handle whoever that comes their way. The only thought that keeps me from saying I trust them completely is beating Gary Patterson twice in about a month and a half. That's scary. And they're going to have a very good chance, I think, to pull that upset and kind of wreck some plans there.
Yeah, that's a very good point. But I'm kind of with you, though. I really think – I feel like they're rolling. I feel like they're maybe a little bit driven by, you know, some of the anti-Big 12 stuff that you're talking about. Some people are still calling it a powder puff conference because there's no defense played there and you get all these wild, crazy high scores.
Yeah, tell TCU. Tell TCU about no defense. They're very, very defensive this year.
Yes, they are. And that's what made Mayfield's performance against them that much more impressive because you're right. They're one of the best defenses in the country. But, you know, the Oklahoma State Oklahoma game and Oklahoma State this past week, they're just crazy numbers up there. So I think Oklahoma's driven, motivated, and I don't think Baker Mayfield would let them lose. I really don't.
Yeah.
And that should
I could see that.
The fourth spot. All right. Hey, great stuff, Bill. Thanks so much for the breakdown. I appreciate your perspective on Baker Mayfield. So if you were GM drafting in the first round and you wanted a quarterback, and let's say Rosen is already gone, and there could be a number of good quarterbacks potentially in this draft, if Mayfield was sitting there, you wouldn't let any of these perceived character flaws stop you from taking him at the end of the day, right?
I really don't think so. Like, I realize GMs overthink everything, and you can talk yourself out of him. But I let his you know, if you got a problem with his height or his release point or whatever, then yeah, but I think we're probably good on the off the field stuff.
Did I blow past the obvious question? I think I did, actually. And you know what, Bill, before you go, you know, I just said if Wisconsin beats Ohio State. I didn't say what about if Ohio State beats Wisconsin? What if Ohio State ends up as a two-loss Big Ten conference champion beating previously undefeated Wisconsin, and there's a slot available, and let's say just for the sake of argument that it's Clemson that beats Miami, and Miami now has one loss. Ohio State has two losses. Does the ACC get a second team in there, or does the Big Ten champ conference champion, but who a team who has two losses, two bad losses too, a blowout loss at home to the Sooners, and then that 31-point shellacking they took at Iowa, unranked Iowa, by the way. How does the committee handle that in such an event?
Yeah, I'm really curious. My gut says Ohio State, two-loss Ohio State gets in ahead of one-loss Miami, but that's only if they've watched the teams play over the course of the whole season. And we, when we start hearing arguments, it always comes back to like scheduling intent and all these things. I'm a numbers guy and I get told, you know, watch the game nerd a lot. I start going to my boiling point when we hear everything talking about scheduling intent and who played whom and not how they played. Ohio State, if they end up 12-2 or 11-2, I guess, they've looked almost perfect about 9 out of 11 games this year, 8.5 out of 11 games this year. And I think they're one of the two or three best teams in the country. I would pick them to beat Miami head-to-head, but the committee who they choose in that scenario would be very interesting. I'm not really sure.
Okay, then what if it's not the ACC game? What if it's Clemson holding serve, or excuse me, let's say Miami wins and knocks Clemson down, and they're out. But what if it's the other one, the SEC scenario? Alabama beats Auburn in the Iron Bowl, then loses to Georgia in the SEC championship game. Does one loss Alabama get dropped down out of the top four in favor of two-loss Ohio State?
I think the world, the college football world, explodes if the committee has to choose between Ohio State and Alabama. I don't even know what happens in that scenario. I think, again, you can make a case that Ohio State's best moments have been better than Alabama's at that point. But if they have went over Auburn, they've got ranked
wins.
Yeah,
but if Alabama doesn't lose by 31 points on the road to an unranked team,
right?
They've never been as bad as Ohio State was at any point in this season either.
Aside from Georgia Southern beating South Alabama by 50 or whatever the other day, Iowa beating Ohio State the way they did is going to be just the most baffling result of the season. It's just amazing to think that that happened the way it did.
No question about it. Bill, great stuff, my friend. Thank you so much for the analysis. We appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
You got it. All right, there you go. Bill Connolly, the de facto commissioner of college football by way of SB Nation and this program. So thanks to him for that. All right, here's what we got coming up. Top of the hour, local sports center coming your way with Kush. We are guest-free in the second half of the show, so we have all kinds of time for your phone calls. Dial us up at 866-240-1065. You got thoughts on the college football playoffs? We'll hear them. You got thoughts on DeShone Kizer being misused so grossly by Hugh Jackson in Cleveland? We'll take your thoughts on that. You want to talk about the Thanksgiving showdown between the Lions and the Vikings? Who you got in that one? We'll take your calls on that and so much more as we continue right here on The Ticket.
That we look at them one game at a time. We look at these guys for who they are. They're a very good team. They're on a roll. We're not worried about ramifications. We're not worried about all of the buildup and things of that nature. We're worried about how we play, and that's what our goal is, to get focused in on our preparation. They're all big. Every single one of them is a factor in the grand scheme of things. They're all big. And the most important one is the next one. That's how we look at it. My experience has been it can work against you more than it works for you when you start looking at the grand scheme of things and acting as if one game is going to make a complete difference in the entire season, because you don't know what's going to happen the rest of the season. You have no idea. None of you know. You think you know. You think we might know how it plays out, but I don't think anybody in here is omnipotent. At least I haven't run into the omnipotent one yet.
Honestly, just trying to kind of feel the wind, and it was gusting pretty good, and then you know, I think right around the time we snapped it, it quieted down a little bit, but man, it was still blowing. So that's a hell of a kick. I got a lot of confidence in that guy. He, you know, obviously we want to start the game with a bunch of points and a bunch of stops on defense, and sometimes it doesn't happen that way, but we're a resilient group. Second half struggle, man. That's a good defense we're facing. It's a good football team. I got a lot of talent, a lot of young talent. You know, we'll have a bunch of stuff to clean up, short week to do it, but it's nice to go on the road in the division and get a win.
Try and do whatever I can to string together some games, continue to prove my development to my teammates, to continue to earn the respect of them. I think this is the first game that, you know, come off the field feeling as if I didn't prove that I, you know, developed in at least one area. Well, it's a bad feeling knowing that it's a question. But yeah, I think that knowing that where you're at going into next week, it at least allows you to have some sort of peace of mind going into the following week.
I had some chances, couldn't get it done. They made some plays at the end, and I gave them a chance to win the game.
I love our focus. I love the fact the way we're practicing, and the word focus is intent. Focus is the mantra right now, and I like where we're at.
A lot of credit goes to it. Senior day, it's a lot of activity going on with what's coming up next, what's down the road, etc. But our players were laser-like focused. That's 2 weeks in a row, and now it's time to turn the rivalry week.
However, we did celebrate it for a quick minute, and then that's over. Now it's time to put our laser lights on our rival.
They were able to crack a few runs in the running game. Taylor got out. We weren't able to get any big chunks in the running game, and they made more plays. We had some opportunities, but I couldn't get it done today. Well, I really thought it was a touchdown from the reviews that were on the scoreboard, what the guys said in the press box. Looked like the left foot got down first. As far as the fumble, that was a mistake. Shouldn't be reaching the ball for the end zone or the pylon unless it's fourth down.
But I am a Heisman voter, and I'm conflicted by it, and I don't want to be the get-off-my-lawn guy. I'm as troubled by the reaction to this as I am by what he did. I mean, let's remember, this is someone who got arrested and apologized. who planted the flag and apologized. And he did this, and I get it. It was disgraceful what Kansas did, but who cares about Kansas? I mean, you have to be above this. I'm still going to vote for him for the Heisman Trophy, but I'm losing faith in this guy. He has a few more weeks, and if he does something like this again, I'm done with him.
I thought what Kansas did initiated his reaction, and he'd be the first one to tell you he's got to be bigger than that. You're talking about probably the Heisman Trophy winner. And when you're chasing a Heisman Trophy, it's not just about being the best player. It's about carrying yourself with integrity and with class. And we all get that competitive spirit, that chip on his shoulder that makes him who he is. But he's got to be able to internalize and be able to have some perspective of where to draw the line. And he let that competitive spirit once again get the best of him. And I think it was probably embarrassing when he went back and looked at the tape.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed, it is. As we roll on, we're at 14 minutes after 4 o'clock. Thanks for being with us. Good top of the hour Sports Center from Cush. And the remainder of the show, quite frankly, is yours. Anything that you would like to talk about, we are guest-free the rest of the way. Unusual for a Monday, but that's the way that it worked out today. A lot of people kind of... maybe getting an early start on the holiday. Thanksgiving Thursday is coming, so people getting out of town. But nonetheless, the opportunity is there for you now at 866-240-1065 to join us on all of these issues. 866-240-1065. Join us on the program. So let's go back to the Baker Mayfield story for a moment, Kush, and I want to invite people and get some thoughts on this. Some of the things that I've heard, some of the things that I've read on social media since Saturday are just so beyond the pale. It's very, very difficult to put into words how I feel about some of the ridiculous things people are saying. That Baker Mayfield should be suspended for the rest of the season because that is such a gross display of unsportsmanlike behavior and an embarrassing example for a role model to kids and blah, blah, blah. He should be suspended for the rest of the season. Baker Mayfield is an example of white privilege, says social media, because if he had been a black quarterback, he would have been suspended. And now that Lincoln Riley, the head coach at OU, has announced his punishment, he is just going to be stripped of his captaincy for the last game of the season and not start the last game of the season, his senior season. That too is an example of him getting away with it, whereas certain other types of players, particularly black players, would not be able to get away with this. How far do they want to push anybody? And, here's the worst part about it. Just, again, considering that everybody seemingly wants to bring in race, or not everybody, but people who are just inclined to bait in such a way. They are they're trying to make a comparison now between Baker Mayfield and Jameis Winston on social media. Look what's happening with Jameis Winston. Look what they're doing to him. What do you mean, look what they're doing to him? Jameis Winston has been accused by an Uber driver of sexual indiscretions, grabbing her in a sexual way without her permission. Jameis Winston denies those accusations and says he's got witnesses. He wasn't the only one in the vehicle. He says that one of his former college teammates was in the vehicle as well. Ronald Darby, he said he was there as well, and Darby says, I didn't do anything. The driver says that's a lie. There was only one. This is an ugly, ugly situation. We're talking about sexual misconduct or sexual assault potentially. And because this is happening to Jameis Winston, naturally his past comes into play here. As people know, who are we talking about? Are we talking about a normal person? Are we talking about a choir boy? No, in this particular case, we're talking about somebody who got into a lot of trouble at college. Got into a lot of trouble stealing things. He was stopped for shoplifting and stealing crab legs back when he was at Florida State. He's had a number of issues in a negative way that make people say, well, if you are in a he said, she said situation, let's look at the character of the he said, she said, and this is what he is, this is what she is, and it's going to help us make up our minds. And some are saying, see, Jameis Winston's indiscretions are being held against him, but Baker Mayfield's just going to get a slap on the wrist. Well, my God. Stop. Stop with the race baiting. This has nothing to do with color. I don't care if Jameis Winston was white. If he was accused of stealing things, he'd be accused of stealing things. And I don't care if Baker Mayfield was black. If he did what he did, he would be, it would, you know, people would react the way they should react in the exact same manner. Grabbing his crotch and yelling F you to Kansas after Kansas A refused to shake his hand before the game in a traditional sign of good luck and respect and let's hope nobody gets hurt. And B, then trying to hurt him with several cheap shots, at least two, and I think you could make a case for the third, that were really, really blatantly cheap shots against him that could have hurt him, his potential earnings, his career, and yes, Oklahoma's national championship prospects. He was angry. And after throwing touchdown after touchdown against them and putting one on them, he kind of felt like I have a right to say, yeah, this is what you get. Blank you. Is it right for him to yell F you? No. Does it happen on football, every football field every Sunday in some capacity or another? Yes, it does. Every Saturday and every Sunday. I guarantee you it does. I've been on sidelines for all of the above. I've been on the field, not Division I, but I've been on college fields, and I can tell you it's the same way in Division III, too. And certainly at the NFL level. That kind of behavior is always. Now, is there always a camera on everybody yelling F you at one another? No, there's not. That makes this a little bit unfair, but he also needs to know this a little bit better. The issue then becomes the crotch grab. Clearly, not a respectful thing. Clearly, not something you would want to teach your kids. Clearly, not something you want to have to ask your kids. If you're watching the game with your six-year-old, and he says, Daddy, why did the number six do that? Can I do that? And I'm just being totally over the top here when I say this. You know, can I do this when I play football? I mean, no kid's actually going to ask that. But this is the kind of, you know, world we're in, where everybody is talking about what was PC, what's politically correct, what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate, and how people should be punished for these kinds of things. So for me, Baker Mayfield, who is clearly the best quarterback in college football this year and clearly should be the Heisman favorite, and is, for me, there does need to be some sort of a punishment. It should not in any way, shape, or form rise to the level of suspension. It should absolutely not take a single Heisman vote away from him, because it's not about that. It's about play. It's about performance. It's about being the best player. And see, it should not hurt his draft stock either. But yes, there should be some sort of punishment. I kind of tend to agree with our guest, Bill Connolly, who said, you know what, it's probably just about right. It wasn't right for him to do that. It isn't something you want to see on TV. I bet he was embarrassed when he saw it played back. But he also has a right to be emotional. Listen, more so, and I'm going to say this, it's going to sound like a diss at NBA players or MLB players or lacrosse players or soccer players or anything else. But look, there is no other sport in which the goal on every single play is to knock the guy across from you down. You realize that, right? There's no sport in which that's the goal, knock the guy to the ground. That's not the goal in sport baseball. It's not the goal in basketball. It's not the goal in lacrosse. It's not even the goal in hockey, even though guys do get knocked down. It's not the goal on every single play. Only football. There's five guys across the front, six when you count the tight end, whose job is to knock the guy across from them on the ground so the ball can be run past them. And it's the job of everybody on the defense's goal. It's their goal every single play to knock the guy with the football down. And that means, if necessary, knocking the guy in front of him down in order to get the guy with the football. In other words, it's a very physically violent contest. The only one of its kind, other than boxing. I'm talking about team sports. It's the only one of its kind in which the goal is to knock somebody down. That is going to get your juices flowing. It's going to get your adrenaline pumping through your veins. It's going to get your blood, your heart rate faster, your blood pumping faster than any other sport. And that is going to bring emotions. It's going to bring anger. It's going to bring hostility, especially if you feel like you're being cheap-shotted. It's going to bring even worse. It's going to bring out your temper. I think it is incumbent upon us to have a little bit of an understanding of that. As long as what you are doing when you express your displeasure with a situation by way of your angry temper isn't in hurting another player. Case in point, Vontaze Burfict. He has a temper. He plays with emotion. He plays with an anger that is fine until it becomes physically harming somebody else. Case in point, Odell Beckham Jr. 2 years ago in the fight with Josh Norman. You're angry. You guys don't like each other. You're jawing at each other. That's fine. You can even F you each other all you want. But until somebody ear holes another person without the other person even being aware, doesn't see it coming, that's when there's a problem. Case in point, Mike Evans. Ironically enough, the aforementioned Jameis Winston. Taunting an opposing player. Who was it last week? It was, oh, for goodness sakes, it was an former Ohio State DB from the Saints two weeks ago. He was poking him in the back of the head. But anyway, then, you know, whoever that was turned around and pushed Winston in the chest. And here comes Mike Evans, full speed, blindside hit on the cornerback. When you let your emotions, your adrenaline, your temper, whatever, get the best of you to the point where you're hurting other people, that's when we have to have a serious punishment. But guess what? That crotch grab didn't hurt anybody. If it had been a middle finger, it wouldn't have hurt anybody physically. Well, you could say it hurt my feelings. Well, lo and behold, woe is the man whose feelings were hurt by seeing some guy grab his crotch on the sideline in a football game when the camera shouldn't have been on him anyway. Woe is me. My goodness gracious. What is this world coming to? I will offer to pay for your therapy when you get done with your counselor, helping you to understand how to remedy yourself and your poor bruised feelings because you saw somebody grab their crotch and you had to explain to your kid what that meant. Or not explain to your kid what that meant. However you want to handle it. I mean, come on. They want to make this thing bigger than it is, and I feel like there has got to be a line between expecting decorum and professional type of behavior and allowing these guys to be as violent as they are. That means they have to be as emotional as they are. Excuse me, they have to be as wound as tightly as they are. And if somebody feels like, especially, that they've been targeted and people have been attempting to injure them, if they respond in a way like this, I'm not going to say I'm okay with it to the point where you don't punish at all, but please, let's keep things into perspective. Interested in your thoughts. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. By the way, I should clarify one other thing. I said a short while ago that the Kansas coach should be held accountable in some way for his players not shaking Mayfield's hand because that kind of prompted this whole thing. And I said I didn't hear him complaining about his own players. I want to retract that. I did find a quote. The Kansas head coach did indeed apologize for his team's behavior, saying he was not informed that they were going to do that before the game. He would never have approved it, and that it will never happen again. David Beatty said, quote, "We let them know that it was unacceptable," meaning his players, "and this will never happen again." So it was not something that the coach tried to do. It was something the players decided to do on their own. So congrats to David Beatty. I apologize for saying that he didn't do anything about this. Oh, by the way, one other note on that before I go to a phone call. One other note on that about the coaches. And I meant to ask this of Bill Conley, but I didn't get to it. Kush, did you watch the actual crotch grab, Jim? I've seen it a number of times.
I've seen it since then. I didn't see it live or anything.
Okay. I didn't see it live either. But I've watched it played in a loop over and over again, okay, as B-roll, as some people on TV were talking about it. They just played it over and over again. So he's screaming out at the field, yelling at you, and they have his face, part of his face blurred, so you can't read his lips. Mm-hmm. But we know what it was. And the crotch grab, and he's continuing to storm down the sideline, on his bench as he yells. And he grabs it not once but twice and continues to yell. And if you look in the, not even the background, basically, but just right behind him as he storms by, turning and yelling and crotch grabbing, I counted just in the short little looped clip that I saw, no less than four different Oklahoma coaches, assistant coaches, looking at him. They all saw it. And I wonder how this would be viewed by the public and by the critics had even one of them grabbed him by the shoulder pad and spun him around and saying, "What are you doing? Get your attention over here. Quit talking to them." And if they saw him crotch grab him by the shoulders and pull him away and say, "What the hell is the matter with you? We don't do that on this field. We don't do this on this side. And that isn't what this university represents." Knock that crap off. I didn't see anybody attempting to discipline the star quarterback. So I would ask football players, if you are one, formally, like me, coaches, do the coaches bear any responsibility for a player's obscene gesture if they see it and do nothing about it? Have they sent enough of a message to their emotional quarterback that this is not acceptable? Have they done enough, you know, to put the you know, put the kibosh on this sort of behavior in the future? Because if they just watch him do it and walk by, and I could swear to you that I saw one of them kind of smirk and smile. You know, it's just like, yeah, Baker, you tell him. And maybe all game long he had been coming off of the field and complaining, and he hadn't done anything. Maybe every time he comes off the field, he's looking at his coaches and saying, "Those bastards are cheap shotting me. You know, I'm gonna kill somebody." Taking cheap shots like that, and maybe the coaches are like, "It's all right, calm down. We got a game to win. You got to stay focused." Blah blah blah. And then at the end of the game, once it's in hand and it's in the fourth quarter, there he lets loose. Maybe they're like, "You know what? He deserves to be able to rant a minute here because we're sick of this crap too." These cheap shots. Maybe there's something to it, but I just wonder, how should a coach have handled that? How should any one of those four coaches that I saw, that he stormed by, kind of looking at him and just kind of doing nothing, how should they have handled that? Would it have changed the way the situation is viewed by the critics? I think it might have just a little bit, if it looked like the coaches were on top of the situation and correcting the behavior immediately. All right, let's go to Toledo and say what's happening to Jimmy. Jimmy, you're on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. What's going on, brother?
What's up? Hey, I don't know about you, but you're probably my age and maybe a little older. I seem to remember a certain pop star that sold hundreds of millions of records, a certain androgynous one that made a career out of grabbing his crotch. I've seen worse at the Super Bowl halftime shows, all right? I don't know about, you know, don't anybody out there who's offended watch, God forbid, the MTV Video Awards. You might really get offended. I couldn't believe it. You know, America, there's just another example where if a little testosterone kind of alarms you, then football's probably not what you want to watch if you're, you know, triggered by testosterone and masculinity. Because sometimes in the heat of the moment and battle, men kind of get, I don't know, vulgar, okay? That, you know, do I agree
with
that?
That's the part
I
was talking about. Thank you, the testosterone flowing. I said adrenaline, but you're right. Male testosterone, you know, when you're playing a violent game, it rises up in you, and yes, sometimes it takes over a little bit, and you have to understand that when you're asking what these guys are asking these guys to do what they're doing.
Boys will be boys, and sometimes you ask people, some of the most reserved people you'll know, you get them between the lines, and then they turn into their alter ego because something they might not do in public or something that isn't really in their personality traits, when you get them in the field of play and in between the lines, there's another side of them that comes out because when you're on the field of battle, quote unquote, you get away with certain things, your competition, the testosterone, the competitiveness comes through in a different way. And people just don't understand. I'm not saying it makes it right, but it's like I don't condone it, but I understand it. And obviously,
I totally agree. And I also understand the need to want to discourage it or disincentivize it. So you've got to do something to him, but not something that is going to be egregious, that's going to harm him, or that's going to harm the program as they try to achieve their goals, too, because there's just no place for that. You have to make the point to them, hey, you can't do that sort of thing, but we're also not going to chop them off at the knees because of it.
Exactly. The guy, you know, listen, he, like you said, he was probably mortified the minute he saw the replays. The fellow you hit on the other, the commish, he hit it right on the head. The punishment fits the crime.
Yeah, it
and
really does.
And to keep harping on it, it's just, you know, it's the newest faux outrage and we'll move on to something else. When we, you know, it's like you said, it was also very relevant that there just wasn't a whole lot going on this weekend. And the other thing I just want to touch on, I'm the biggest Buckeye fan in the world, but I do not want them within a mile of the playoffs. And what, I didn't hear you cover this scenario, but what if Oklahoma loses and everybody else wins out? Are you meaning to tell me that if they lost to TCU and they were two wins and two losses and Ohio State beats Michigan handily and they say they whoop Wisconsin, that anybody in their right mind would say that they belong in the playoff over Oklahoma? I mean, I'm the biggest Buckeye fan I know, but they don't belong there because if you put our Buckeyes in, then you're basically saying a 31-point loss doesn't matter. And it's just ridiculous because, look, we don't like the 14 playoff. It's better than what it was, and it's not perfect. But you got to make these losses count for something. And I know we used to sit around and whine and complain about all the favoritism that certain other programs got, like Alabama or Notre Dame. You know what? We got our favoritism arguably the first year, and we got there and won. Then last year, we got picked over Penn State, and we got there and we laid an egg. Now, I don't know about you folks out there, but we lost fair and square. The boys took a pounding to a team they shouldn't have lost to, and I don't want the taste in my mouth that we had at the end of the Trestle era where you almost had to apologize for the Big Ten. And we need to just take our lumps, win out, and go into the season next year on a good note.
Yeah, Jimmy, I think that's very well said. And the only thing I would say in response that the committee might say, because I think you're right, if Oklahoma loses to TCU, by the way, all that does is level the playing field with them and TCU because they just beat them 2 weeks ago. And so it would be, you know, 1-1. In other words, their loss would have been wiped out by their win or vice versa, whereas Ohio State couldn't say that. But the thing that the committee would say in weighing two-loss OU versus two-loss Ohio State and a head-to-head going OU's way would be the conference championship thing. Now, I don't think it should be that way, but it does mean something to them. They will say Oklahoma essentially lost its Big Ten conference championship game to TCU, a team they beat a couple of weeks ago. Ohio State just won the conference championship, and there's no way we're going to take a Power 5 conference champion and leave them out while putting a Power 5 conference runner-up and putting them in. That would probably be their argument.
Yeah, well, exactly, but then they would contradict everything they did just the year before when they left Penn State out, who was the conference champion.
And you know what their response to that would be, Jimmy? It's a different committee. And listen, I mean this legitimately. You realize this committee is a rotating group. It's not the same group of people last year. This year's committee guys might not have done that last year.
You know what you do? Then you'd go down to the best loss and the worst loss. Then you look at, okay, well, who did Miami lose to? They lost one time all year at the last game of the season they played, and they lost to the third-ranked team in the country, or at that point, maybe even the second-ranked team in the country, in their conference championship, who, by the way, beat Ohio State 31-0 the last time they played, and who's only lost this year. They've only lost one time.
Right. To Syracuse.
So, I mean, there's just no way you can justify putting Ohio State in. It's a 31-point road loss to Iowa, who, by the way, just lost to Purdue at home. You can't put them in. And I say this because I love my Buckeyes. I love the program. You can't turn this team into something that they're, you know, where people already, there's enough Buckeye haters out there already. We don't need to add more to the list and go and do things because, well, hey, we got a Buckeye on our helmet. That's
BS.
Yeah,
and you know, they would. It would create a lot of animosity for the Buckeyes and for
you
want to
deserve, you want to deserve the things that you want to earn them. And being, I don't know, what would it be, 11-2 and going to the top four. I'm not saying we don't have the talent. I'm certain that we're one of the top four talent in the country.
Yeah, but the resume of achievement doesn't indicate it. Yeah, there's too much mess, too much red ink on their resume, with the two losses, one being a home loss by 15 to those same Sooners, and then, as you say, losing by 31 at Iowa. It's just there's no way to overcome that as far as
I'm concerned. And the committee just creates a nightmare for the next committee down the line. Because let me say, if you let a team like Ohio State in with a 31-point road loss to an unranked team that turned around and then lost twice in a row, then you're going to have to pretty much let everybody in after that.
That's a very good point. Hey, Jimmy, got to run, brother. Thanks
later.
For the call. Really, really good points there that you make all the way around. All right, so we're going to get a bottom-of-the-hour Sports Center here coming up after I remind you that, you know what, if you're watching games all over the place, let's say you got hockey on your phone, you're watching basketball on your tablet, and you're watching football on the TV screen, what are you trying to do? Go cross-eyed? Stop settling for a bad viewing experience at home and watch all the games on all the big, beautiful screens at Buffalo Wild Wings. That's right. You can also choose from over a dozen draft beers on tap while you're there, 21 signature sauces and seasonings for your wings, and, yes, your favorite seat. It's at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. All right, Kush, we got Bottom of the Hour Sports Center coming up. I want to come back. I want to talk more about this Baker Mayfield story. I also want to talk about the University of Michigan. Wolverine fans, in the greater Toledo area. Is Harbaugh ball working? 3 years in, they're in fourth place in the Big Ten East. 3 years in, is it working? Are you satisfied with the progress? Or is this a big disappointment thus far? You tell me. The losses to Ohio State, the losses continuing to Michigan State, not winning conference championships, not going to a playoff. I know it's only year three, but is Harbaugh ball working? Yes or no? Tell me why. 866-240-1065. Come up.
The Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed it is. As we roll onward, it's 4:48. I got a lot of good people on hold who want to talk about Michigan and whether or not Jim Harbaugh's methods are working. Is this satisfactory for you in terms of progress in rebuilding what had been broken in Michigan football? But before I do that, Kush, I would feel remiss if I didn't get a little bit of reaction in here to the passing of Terry Glenn, the former Buckeye wide receiver who died in a single car crash. After 12 years, by the way, after the Ohio State, his All-American career at Ohio State, 12 years in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in a single car crash earlier today. Just a very, very sad, sad story. And Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch, who covers Ohio State sports, got a chance to talk with Terry Glenn's coach when he was at Ohio State. And that, of course, you will remember, is John Cooper. So here's just a very quick reminiscence on the passing of the great Terry Glenn, one of the great Buckeyes, really offensive performers of all time, Tim May with John Cooper.
John Cooper, you coached Terry Glenn. You helped him get his feet on the ground, you and your staff. He came here as pretty much a walk-on who had to prove himself academically and became one of the great players in Ohio State football history. Just, number one, what's your thought now in hearing the news about him today and then him as a player and a person?
I'm taking a walk this morning, and I got the phone call and got that news, and just, I mean, it's like you're going almost going shock. I mean, this guy he came up the hard way, as you mentioned. To see somebody progress like he did, Tim, and leave here, maybe arguably the best wide receiver to ever play at Ohio State, won the Biletnikoff Award, seventh player taken in the draft, All-Pro and all that kind of stuff. Your heart goes out to his family.
Yeah. You know, he had some tough times, a lot of it self-imposed, but he seemed to have gotten his act together of recent. Does that just kind of add to maybe the tragedy here?
No question about it. And the way it happened, I guess he had a car wreck and got thrown out, got killed, but leaves a fiance and six kids. So it's devastating.
Just wanted to kind of get that out there. I mean, everybody has a reaction, but that's his former coach. Obviously, very, very troubled and upset, as we all are, about the passing of a man at the age of 43. I mean, youthfulness, such a bright future still in front of him, and just a very, very terrible story. And our thoughts and prayers are with everybody who's close to Terry Glenn. Okay, now going north of the state line to Terry Glenn and John Cooper and everybody else's archenemies on the football field is the University of Michigan, which is now, after losing to Wisconsin, previously losing Michigan State, as well as, who was the other loss on the schedule? Penn State, got routed by Penn State. They have secured fourth place in the Big Ten East. That can't be good enough. Is Harbaugh ball working for you if you're a Michigan fan? Eric is in Toledo. Eric, thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What say you about the state of Michigan football?
Well, obviously it turned around as opposed to the Rich Rod and the Brady choke years. But I think if he loses to Ohio State again, he'll be 0-3 against the Buckeyes. He's already 1-2 against Michigan State. No, he's 2-1 against Michigan State. And he'll be 1-2 against Penn State. Those are the three teams you have to play every year just to get to the Big Ten Championship. If he can't win two out of three of those games on year in and year out, you should be on the hot seat. He should be.
And he might lose his job. Is there any room for the fact that he hasn't beaten those teams, that he just now is getting his philosophy ingrained into the heads of guys that he recruited? In other words, his first year, it was all Brady Hoke's people. Last year, it was, his guys were all freshmen, mostly true freshmen, red shirts, so he still really wasn't playing with the guys he recruited. This is his first year of playing with his guys who would be considered, his recruits. Any room for that?
Well, I go to what Urban Meyer said about Tom Herman's excuses down at Texas. They're not somebody else's guys. They are now your guys. they are playing in your system with your coaches, and it's your job as a coach to make the players in your system and identify the players that work in your system. That's what makes Wisconsin such a great team. You don't see them getting all these five-star recruits like, you know, Ohio State or Alabama get. They work with guys that are four and three stars, and they coach them up, and they're 11-0.
To your point, by the way, about the teams you have to beat when you're at Michigan, well, first of all, just because they're your rivals, Michigan State and Ohio State, and then Penn State, when you're talking about just getting out of the Big Ten East to get to the championship game, you were wrong. They're 1-2 against Michigan State under Harbaugh.
Okay.
You flipped it to 2-1. I thought you were right the first time, and when you flipped it,
yeah,
the way I double-checked it, and no, he only beat them last year. He lost to him his first year, beat him last year, lost to him this year. So 0-3 against Ohio State, potentially. We'll see what happens Saturday, 1-2, and then, as you say, Penn State, 1-2. So you're right. And that's the reason I'm asking if this is working, because, you know, you weren't brought here to beat Indiana. You weren't brought here to beat, you know, Maryland and Rutgers. You were here to beat Ohio State, Michigan State, and Penn State, and obviously compete for Big Ten and thus a national championship. And so far, you know, year three, that's just not going to happen, and the earliest it could happen would be in his fourth year next year. And I just want to know what kind of patience Michigan fans have for this.
Well, I look at what Wisconsin's doing with Paul Chris. Came in the same time as Harbaugh.
Yep.
And Paul Chris is sitting with an 11-0 team right now. So are they his guys? It doesn't matter. Paul Chris is doing it with guys that are now freshmen, like Jonathan Taylor, who decided, I'm going to take over the starting job over Bradrick Shaw.
Be fair to Harbaugh, though, I would ask this. If Harbaugh was on the side of the conference that has Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Northwestern, and Purdue, might he also be 11-0? I mean, it's such a tilted, imbalanced conference with almost
all of
the power in the Big Ten East. It's really, really difficult. I just wonder, you know, Harbaugh might be sitting over there if he was coaching Wisconsin, for example, and be the same way.
I think it's possible, absolutely.
I'm not here to bear Jim Harbaugh, and I'm not here to defend him either. I'm just wanting to know, and I'm trying to be fair on all sides of that. Eric,
yeah,
I got to run. I appreciate your thoughts. Cam on the air in Toledo first. Cam, your thoughts on where Harbaugh and the fourth place Wolverines are now in the growth and development and rebuilding of that program?
Yeah, how's it going, Bob?
Good, sir.
I'm not quite ready to sound the alarm yet, but a lot of things concern me, namely the play calling. I mean, at times, it's gotten so repetitive that teams have almost been able to predict us. You know what I mean? Like, our defense is one of, if not the best in the country, you know, that should be able to keep us in games. I mean, if we were able to put up maybe 28, 30 points a game, I mean, we're looking at a national championship team here. But the fact of the matter is, we're not able to put up points. So I think in the offseason, they really need to maybe switch offensive coordinators or something, because something's not working.
That's a very fair question to ask about whether or not it's the offensive coordinator and the play calling or not. I think it's also fair, in my opinion, I got to run here, Cam, thanks for the call. I think it's also fair to ask, does he have the right quarterback at this stage? Remember, Wilton Spate was his QB last year. He was at the start of this year. He got hurt, and then he had to scramble trying to make John O'Korn work, and it doesn't. Then he had Brandon Peters, a fresh rookie, essentially, you know, a redshirt freshman starting. Now he gets hurt. So guiding the team on the field has been a difficult thing for him to find as well. And you wonder if he has the right quarterback and give him time to develop that guy, and thus then a pipeline of quarterbacks after. That's, of course, the key here. Does that change things? Is it coaching? Is it play calling? Or is it personnel and talent on the field? All right. I wish I had more time to talk about this. You know what? Rest assured, we will talk about this tomorrow. It's a very good topic, especially as we get set for Ohio State and Michigan this Saturday. We will bring this back up tomorrow. I can promise you that. Hey, before we head out of here and get you ready for drive time today, though, I want to do something nice for you. I've got two more pair of tickets left to go see Joe Bonamassa Monday. That's a week from today at Stranahan. If you would like to go see Joe Bonamassa and enjoy yourself there with a guest, be caller number 6 or caller number 7 as we wrap up the show, to 866-240-1065, and we will set you up. Joe Bonamassa at Stranahan, Monday, November 27th. And then stick around, because drive time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.